you. We will go on to case number 2, which is Patel versus Gonzalez. Good morning, Mr. Berman.
Good morning, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Judge Rovner, Judge Evans, and Judge Sykes. My name is Stephen Berman. I represent the petitioner, Vinod Kumar Patel, versus Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General. This matter comes before the court on petition for review from the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals. At issue before the court is whether the board's decision was that the petitioner is subject to removal is erroneous as a matter of law or is unsupported by probative evidence of record.
Mr. Berman, why isn't the order of sentence and commitment by itself enough to establish the nature of his conviction?
Thank you, Your Honor. We would urge that it's not good enough because the Supreme Court held that it's not sufficiently reliable. The U.S. Supreme Court last year in Shepard stated that certain documents are good enough on their own. They're sufficient to determine what statute, what crime was the person convicted of. That's the plea colloquy, the judgment of conviction, the indictment. I believe those are the only documents. There may be another. Other documents besides those don't have what the Supreme Court called in Jones, they don't have sufficient indicia of reliability. They're like the document this court dealt with in Dashto. They're clerical. They can be simply clerical documents, like the order here. This is an order that was prepared by a clerk to be sent to the warden of the prison. It's not the kind of document we would urge that's sufficiently reliable to state not just the nature of the conviction, Your Honor, what statute was the petitioner convicted of.
How is it that Shepard is applicable at all in this context? That was a criminal case. It involved the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Armed Criminal Act and sufficient proofs to apply that statute.
Yes.
This is a deportation case.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor.
Different burdens of proof, different rules
as far
as evidence.
It's true. Actually, the burdens of proof we would urge work in our favor. However, the initial case, the line of cases that ends with Shepard starts with Taylor. This court applied Taylor is the original case. It says that gives the standard that that they call the categorical approach for what was the prior conviction. This court and every court has adopted that, I believe every court, at least this court, however, has adopted that as the standard also for proving deportability, the same standard. It's been applied and it's cited consistently in all of the removal cases where that's the issue.
But you're not contesting the nature of the crime that your client was convicted of. You're contesting the documentary proof of his conviction, which is a different inquiry, seems to me.
Your Honor, here's why.
I mean, you're not saying that a conviction for predatory criminal sexual assault doesn't qualify. You're saying there wasn't sufficient proof that he was actually convicted because this document that was cited by Judge Rovner, it isn't sufficient.
The order of sentence and commitment, we urge, is not sufficient proof of what statute he was convicted of. We don't concede that he was convicted of predatory criminal assault of a minor.
I thought he admitted that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I thought he admitted that when testified.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Yes, the court took his testimony. We argued before the court. First of all, the judge himself said he's not going to know what number the statute was. The judge knew he wouldn't know, and the judge stated on the record during the proceedings he's not relying on petitioner's testimony, and he stated in his oral decision he's not relying on petitioner's testimony. That's not the way he's making that determination. He's relying on one document only, the order of sentence and commitment. We're discussing a person who doesn't speak English. He's testifying through an interpreter and asking him what was the statute under which you were convicted when you were charged under numerous different statutes in a multiple count indictment. The court agreed and understood he's not going to know which one he pled to.
Well, in what sense was his conviction not one for sexual abuse of a minor?
If we know what under the categorical approach, if he was convicted of predatory sexual abuse of a minor, it's sexual abuse of a minor. We don't deny that. At issue is that what he was convicted of? What did he plead to? He was charged under numerous counts, and not all of them had an element of it being a minor. And if that's not an element of the offense, then under the categorical approach, he's not subject to removal for a conviction of that offense. We look to the elements of the offense to which he actually pled, not the underlying conduct.
So what was he doing in jail? In other words,
he's convicted of something. Okay, right. And the statute, actually, the U.S. Supreme Court also makes that distinction in Jones. There's a difference between proving that there was a conviction of something and what was the statute he was convicted of. They're not the same. The document shows he's in jail. He testified from the jail. There's no question there's a conviction there. But the service has to prove by clear and convincing evidence what statute he was convicted of, and that those elements of the statute meet some definition for removability. It's not enough he's in jail and it might be under some wide variety of offenses under a multiple count indictment. It's just not enough.
He got an 8-year prison sentence here. Are there different penalties for different sections of this statute?
Sure, there are.
I mean, that seems like a fairly significant sentence. Are there penalties less than that, that so you could know that those other sections would not be applicable?
It may be possible. Nobody ever. It's not petitioner's burden on that issue. It's Department of Homeland Security's burden to prove what he was convicted of. There's been no argument and no discussion at all showing that this sentence links up with this particular statute, and only this statute and not one of the others. Suppose it's criminal sexual assault. Perhaps that has an 8-year sentence. I don't know, but if it does, it's not sexual abuse of a minor, because that might not be an element of the offense, and that's what they need to prove. They could have made such an argument, but the immigration judge didn't, the department didn't, and still hasn't. I'm cutting into... May I save rebuttal? Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Ms. Skadron, good morning.
Good morning. Terry Skadron for the respondent. Your Honor, the only question before the court is whether the DHS met its burden of proving that the petitioner was convicted of predatory sexual criminal assault of a child under the Illinois statute 14.1A1. And if the court, and I believe as Mr. Berman has just conceded, if the court finds that DHS discharged that burden, that is the end of the query here, because it's clear that that statute, that Illinois statute, categorically describes sexual abuse of a minor. The agency had no need to inquire into anything concerning the circumstances of the petitioner's particular offense, because every provision of the Illinois statute describes sexual abuse of a minor. In this case, there is no question that DHS discharged its burden by producing the certified order of sentence and commitment, the document that appears at AR 66. Now, the petitioner has characterized that document as a mere clerical order, but that's not the case. When you examine the document, this was signed by a judge. This is a contemporaneous criminal record, which was the one that committed this petitioner to jail for an 8-year sentence for his sexual abuse offense. The document shows that the petitioner pleaded guilty to that offense, and the document also identifies the specific criminal provision under which he was convicted. It reflects that he was sentenced to 8 years incarceration for the offense. In fact, in his brief to the BIA, the petitioner admitted that the sentencing order showed the statute, I mean, showed the guilty plea and showed the statutory provision to which the petitioner pleaded guilty. That's at AR4. That was enough to satisfy the DHS's burden of proof. Under the INA, an order of sentence, a judicial order of sentence, is one of the types of documents that can be used to prove a conviction. And DHS did not have to produce any other documents in this particular case to prove up the conviction. This case is not like Dashto, where DHS was relying upon the clerk of court's characterization of what was in the judicial record of conviction. This actually was a judicial record. It's also unlike the Shepherd case. Assuming that the case applies, Shepherd held that to prove a conviction, you need a judicial record of conviction. That's what we have here. In Shepherd, the issue was that the government was relying upon a police report and an application for a complaint. Those were not the judicial records of conviction, and the Supreme Court found that that was insufficient under the facts of that case. We don't have that situation here. I really don't have anything more to add to it. I think it's a fairly straightforward case. The petitioner did testify consistently with the order of sentence. However, the petitioner's testimony was not necessary to the DHS's discharge of its burden of proof. All that was needed was that single judicial record. All the other evidence in the record is consistent with that record, and we urge the court to affirm the order of removal in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gadron. Mr. Berman, 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll do my best. Your Honors, the statute does say which documents can be used as proof of a conviction. They don't say that they are sufficient to meet the burden of proof of clear and convincing evidence. Indeed, in this case, the certified statement of conviction, it was entered into the record. That's one of the documents listed. The trouble is it doesn't say that he pled guilty to anything. It lists various charges, and then it says that 3 through 12 were dropped, and it doesn't say he pled to anything. According to the government's reasoning, this should be enough to prove the conviction. Obviously, it's not enough. It can't be enough if it doesn't say he pled to anything. This is the order of sentence and commitment. It's in the record. It's frankly scribble. It's shorthand. PG, no FG, maybe. CO1, C through 12. This is not a reliable document that can be used. The probability of an error is high, and the board's own decision shows just how high that probability of error is.
What's unreliable about it? It lists the offense. It lists the statute. It lists the sentence. It's signed by the judge and the clerk, and it's certified. How is it unreliable?
The reason it's unreliable...
Just because it's handwritten doesn't make it unreliable.
Being hand-printed alone doesn't. But, Your Honor, we would urge that... Under Shepherd, it's not one of the listed...
Shepherd does not apply to your counsel. This is a deportation case.
Okay. I understand Your Honor's position. We would urge, just based on common sense, the probability of a clerical error in this type of a form is high. The board itself miscited the statute. The respondent conceded that in their brief. The probability of citing the wrong statute in something that's whipped off by the clerk that the defendant never even sees, it's too high to meet a burden of proof by clear and convincing evidence. That's what we urge to the court. We urge this court has always applied the Taylor line of cases to deportation, and that their reasoning, we urge, is even stronger in deportation because deportation has a higher standard of proof than the sentencing guidelines do. Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.